Hello everyone and welcome to the Constructive Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to the 339th episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your rogue host, Mason, joined by my wizard co-host, Allie. Allie, how you doing?
Yeah, I think that was spot on.
Yeah, I felt like it was pretty good. I felt like I could go cleric, because I'm kind of supportive at time, you know? Like, I could be hyper-supportive, but I thought rogue was a little better with all the Among Us that's been happening. More apt. Yeah.
All those types of games, I'm definitely either cleric or wizard, but I do really vibe with wizard, so I appreciate that.
Nice. I had the soul read. There was no pre-show on that. That was just me taking shots. Whew. Well,
it worked. There you go.
Yeah, you love to hear when a plan comes together. Speaking of a plan coming together, we're actually going to do the Zendikar Rising Pick 2 set review right now. So let's hop right into that. Let it be known that our show is sponsored by Oasis Games. If you want to get some of these brand new cards, you can go to oasisgames.com and use code WouldThatBeGood to get 4% off every order, and use code CCMTG to get 15% off your first order. Might be a great way to pick up all these double-faced cards. Cards are super cheap right now, Allie. I was looking at some of the prices and stuff. I guess it's because paper cards are just confetti at the moment. They won't be that way forever, and I think some cards in here have the potential to be eternal staple all-stars, which is crazy because I think the set's kind of low power. But that's the kind of world we live in these days, I guess.
Yeah.
And you can also support the show by going to patreon.com/CCMTG. Let's just hop into the Pick 2 set review, though. So if you've never joined us before for a set review, the way we do it here on Constructed Criticism is we have five categories, and we're going to talk about two cards each per category. And basically what this means is you're going to get a top 10 from each of us, but instead of having to frame each card when we get there and you're kind of like, oh, number 5 means it's a card they kind of think will make it, but they won't really make it. And like number 10 is a card that like maybe we like have a special connection to or something like that. We're just giving you a category. That way you know the criteria which we're talking about the card, and we don't have to give this extra context and it's kind of blurry. And it allows for some really cool conversations that normally wouldn't happen in like a top 10 set review, because normally if you're on a top 10 set review, you're basically just looking for the most efficient cards possible. And that's not always what our criteria is about, so it's pretty exciting. Today we're going to do sleeper cards of the set, double face cards of the set, wow, which is a new category we'll get to when that time comes, hopeful, and then hit. And so let's just hop right into it with sleeper cards in the set. Sleepers are cards that we think people haven't really talked about that much or have gone kind of unnoticed and we think are pretty strong. And I'll kick it off with the card I think has the coolest art in the set and I think is legitimately going to be a role player. And that's Tangled Florahedron. It's 1 and a green for an elemental 1/1 that you can tap to make a green mana. So you can already tell, basically an all-star. But you can also play it as a land, so it enters the battlefield tapped as a 4. So there's a bunch of cards in this set that are double-faced cards that are lands on the back. That's kind of like the gimmick for this set. So I think Tangled Florahedron Alley is really, really cool because when you build the kind of decks, you know, with like Paradise Druids and those kind of cards, etc., you kind of skimp on the lands a little bit, right? Because these things are essentially lands, so you don't want to like have so many mana sources, right? Like your deck kind of already ends up having like 30 mana sources. And so what happens is that you have these really powerful curve draws, but sometimes you have to mulligan a bit more because normally where you would have like a forest, you have a Paradise Druid, right? Tangled Florahedron fixes that problem. And so I think it's just like a totally powerful, like if your deck is looking to do that sort of thing, this card's going to be like a low-key all-star because you're just going to have way more hands that are like other off-color land, Tangled Florahedron, another one, and then like a 4-drop. And that's the kind of hand that you would have to mulligan if they were Paradise Druid, and you just get to keep with Tangled Florahedron. So I think this is great. So, Allie, do you have any thoughts on this card? I know I kind of just spieled about it there for a minute.
Yeah, I think these new cards are like kind of difficult to evaluate. I think they're just a super net positive for Magic, right? Because we all know there's nothing more infuriating than flooding out or getting mana screwed, and that kind of feels like a way you just, like, pick which half you want, or, like, which half you don't need, and I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I also like that, like, okay, so that's, like, really good. Like, that's a great thing to have on a card, but most of the cards, there are a couple, but for the most part, they're kind of weaker than their counterparts would be. So in exchange for that extra consistency, you are playing with a weaker face card, which is a really nice way to balance it, right? Because we would hate for games to turn into Hearthstone, you know, where we play, like, 15 land decks or whatever, and maybe we'll have decks like that, you know, if things are a little too efficient. But it seems to be that, you know, the cards that, for the most part, that we're looking at are kind of, like, on the weaker side, maybe a one or a two of, and we're not just playing, you know, oops, all spells. So,
yeah.
I'll just do my other card real quick, and then you can go through your two sleepers. My other one is Jawri's Disruption. It's J-W-A-R-I. I don't know how you would say that, but it's one in a blue instant, and it's counter-target spell unless it's a controller plays pays one, and it can also be an island. Basically, the thought process behind this card is that Sensor saw a lot of play, and while Sensor does have the graveyard synergies to really work with it and can find actual spells, a lot of the times it feels like you're cycling Sensor to find a land in the early game. And late game, you were definitely looking for a real spell. And I thought this kind of card seems like a nice little role player that no one's really talking about, that control decks would love to have. Like, maybe you want to play one more land in your deck, and just having one of this card gives you the kind of the, like, ooh, I, like, got them on curve, right, and got rid of their 4-drop play. Or I just, you know, made my land drop on turn one as a tap land, and I'm super happy now because, you know, my hand's going to curve out. So, just another example of those cards. I think this is going to be another, like, silent killer type card. Kind of like Tanglefoor Hedron. Do you have any thoughts on Force Spike the land?
Yeah, these cards are really cool. I think overall this set feels a lot less powerful than what we've seen in 2019, 2020. And honestly, like, maybe that's just a good thing.
Yeah.
We don't need Uro in every set. Like, we can be excited about Mana Tithe land.
Yeah. It really does show, too, right, that, like, there are other ways to push cards besides stronger and stronger, right? Like, how much are you willing to pay? Like, how bad of a card are you willing to play if it gives you a land, right? Like, that's, like, an interesting, one not as flashy type experiment that they can, you know, kind of do and leads to interesting sets, for sure.
Yeah, like, what if this whole spell slash, like, land thing becomes just, like, crucial in deck building and changes it, like, on a fundamental level, but, like, because of that, these, like, okay medium cards are kind of just the standard.
Yeah.
It's in standard, I guess.
Yeah. It's definitely, I think it definitely has potential to do that. And I think a lot of the times where, like, you know, sometimes you're like, gosh, I want to play, like, that 25th land in my mid-range deck, and you would play something maybe like a Blighted Fin, right? Or like a Arch of Oresco or something that had, like, it was a mana source, but it would also double as a land. It was double as a spell, right? And those sort of cards, I think these cards are, like, more powerful versions of that, and our decks are going to be way more consistent thanks to that. And, you know, I think it's just going to lead to some really interesting gameplay, especially when, like, if things continue on this power level, if everything's around this power level, I wonder how much stronger these get, you know what I mean? Like, they kind of get offsetted by stronger sets like Eldraine. But, well, I guess that's 2 years. I'm talking a year from now. I'm just excited. That's how cool this set is to me. I don't know. Allie, what's your first sleeper?
All right, I got Nighthawk Scavenger. Sorry, not doing the uncommons with you. And
whoa, why are we getting so aggressive?
So this is one black. Huge mana box, or text box, of Flying, Death Touch, Lifelink. Its power is equal to 1 plus the number of card types among cards in your opponent's graveyards. So 1 plus star 3. I actually have seen, like, a couple people raise interest in this card, but I think that, like, they've also pointed out, like, why aren't people really talking about this card? This card just seems, like, I don't know, very good. I have seen people trying to make, like, different, like rogue tribal decks, like with Dimir. I think there's a couple like cool things you can do there. I don't know. I just like, I don't have a concrete place to put this in my head, but it seems like something that is one of the better like black cards we've seen in a while, right? So it just like feels like it has to go somewhere.
Yeah, it has a lot of like powerful things going on without doing anything, right? Like ultimately it's just a like a beat stick or whatever, but it's like very, very good. So I don't want to undersell this, just like, you know, like a blunt instrument. But yeah, it works really well with the rogue archetype. If you haven't looked too much in this set, is very much about mill the opponent. So I could see something with like some of those cards, the Lord. I think Drown in the Lock is a card from Eldraine that can be awkward at times, but you know, if you combine that with the rogue stuff, that's very good at being like a counterspell kill spell. And you know, the classic argument is that like, oh, like the Uro decks are just going to eat their own graveyard, so you're helping them. But the Uro decks are really good at filling their graveyard, so you can very easily still have a lot going on with these rogue cards. And yeah, I think this seems like a really powerful, like, if you play Lord into this, that's just like a bunch of damage coming in on the fourth turn. And if you have some amount of permission, your opponent's going to have a miserable time. So
yeah, there's also just like the thought that like a lot of these mill decks have tried, like people have always tried to make mill decks work. And I think one of the biggest struggles of mill decks in general is like, there's not really a good way to win the game.
Yeah.
Except like milling your opponent out, which is obviously like not going to happen in a lot of situations. So even if we see like the old, like modern mill deck, they had played Jace's something.
Oh, Phantasm. Yeah, the one Phantasm. Man 5/5.
So it was just like a one mana 5/5, and like that, and that was something that killed people.
Mm-hmm.
So just like having that additional pressure, I think might make something viable. Don't go quoting me. Like Mythic Meebo thinks mill is OP in Zendikar, but
yeah. Yeah, you took your shot on the Abzan deck, and I feel like you've been scarred ever since, Allie. I I feel that.
I'm so sad. That would have been so cool.
Maybe it's going to be great now. The standard format's a lot weaker, so it's going to be wild. But yeah, it's super interesting. I'm also super excited for, like, you know it's going to happen, like, week one coverage. Someone's going to have this Nighthawk in play, and the other person's going to have, like, a kind of optimal play, but it's going to put them dead one turn sooner thanks to the Nighthawk, and they're going to have that tension, and it's going to be so cool. Just the little things, you know, like, I really want to play this instant. If I play this instant, I take two more damage, which is the world right here. So I guess I'll play my creature. So that's super cool. What's your other card?
I also like the Archpriest of Iona. Just another star creature. I have a type. It's one white. Archpriest of Iona's power is equal to the number of creatures in your party, which is another new thing in Zendikar. If you don't know, your party, so the reminder text here is your party consists of up to one of each of cleric, rogue, warrior, and wizard. Now you get me and Mason's joke at the beginning of the podcast.
Foreshadowing.
And then at the beginning of combat on your turn, if you have a full party, target creature gets +1/+1 and gains flying until end of turn. So, I feel like for the longest time there just like hasn't been a mono white aggro deck in forever, and maybe there still can't be in standard because it just kind of came and went with like Ixalan, Block, and Dominaria. But maybe we can even look at something in historic. There's just like a lack of a good white one drop, and even if you just have one other like of the creature types in your party, this is already a cleric. Like, you can just pair it with a rogue, a warrior, or a wizard, and it automatically becomes just a 2/2 for one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like a goblin guide.
Yeah, and there's one card, I don't know if it's on either of our lists, to be honest, but it's like a green 2-drop that counts as the full party. And like if you can like assemble a full party, this thing becomes super strong. So I really like this card. I don't have a lot to say because it's just kind of like an efficient threat. But like a one mana 1/2 that sometimes is a 2/2 is pretty good, and if your deck can make it sometimes a 3/3 or 3/2, sorry, that's really good.
Yeah, I think even just like even if you never make it a full party and you just pair it with another color, like you can easily get like blue white or black white with a rogue. You can do Boros and get some warriors in there. Like, I think there's a lot of cool options with this.
Yeah, one thing I haven't done yet, because I was just been kind of lazy, but I would love to go back and look back at Eldraine through, like, the last year's cards and just see the white cards that are this creature types that are for party, right? Because there definitely weren't a lot, but things like Robber of the Rich are a rogue, right? And that suddenly matters a whole bunch now, so... Yeah, this
That's just awesome. Like, you play this on turn one, turn two, you play a robber swinging for four.
Bang. Next game, please.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think those sort of things matter a lot. Next up, our next category is double-faced cards. So every set we like to do something that's kind of focused on that set. And this set is the double-faced card slash kicker set. And since every mechanic's kicker at its heart, we decided to talk about double-faced cards instead. So I have kind of a cop-out. I put the pathway lands. So the pathways, if you haven't seen them yet, are the dual lands for this set. And basically they come in untapped as either like an island or a mountain or like a plains or a forest. And they're very strong, but they're a lot worse than they seem, I think, for like when you think about it at first glance. It makes things like Uro a lot harder to cast. And I think they're going to be really strong and impactful in Standard, but it's going to lead to some interesting decisions and some really cool this thought moments. And I mentioned it earlier, but they were going to see that cool thing on coverage where it's like, oh my gosh, Mythic Meebo has a Robber of the Rich and some white 2-drop, and she has the red-white pathway land. Which land does she play? It's her only land right now. What land will she draw next? And that leads to some like really cool story moments and some exciting, diverse gameplay, despite it being a dual land, which kind of, you know, typically are kind of lame at the whole like fixing your mana thing. They just kind of give it to you most of the time. So
yeah, I actually had for one of my double face cards, I also said the pathway land, so I think I should just tag this on here.
Hit me.
I think they're just like really cool. I think it's kind of as close as we've gotten to a traditional like dual land in a while, right? Like, it doesn't cost anything, and you make one color or the other. Granted, you kind of have to stick with that one. But I think it's really cool. I think it does have a lot of thought decisions that you said as well. I'm specifically really excited for... I guess the Gruul one applies to Standard too, but the Orzhov and Gruul ones in Historic kind of made me really interested because both Gruul aggro and like Orzhov Vampire's mana is garbage.
Yeah, really bad.
So bad. To the point where I think like those decks can't even really exist or like compete with anything else just because their mana is so bad. So I'm really excited, even if these aren't like Taiga and Scrubland. Very excited to see if this makes any meaningful impact on decks that like really just never had a shot because their mana was garbage.
Yeah, it can't be understated how strong these decks are, especially decks that are like predominantly one color, right? Like if you build your Gruul deck to be really green and have a few red cards, right? Like maybe a dragon, maybe a Spellbreaker, maybe an Embercleave, and so you only really need to flip it once, right? And it's not that tension I talked about. These become super powerful lands, and so can't be understated. I was building a deck for my article this week for the cycling deck, and the Jeskai cycling. Well, yeah, it's not super exciting, but you would just play like 9 planes before, right? And now you get to play 4 of the white blue paths. And then now sometimes you get to cast your blue cycling cards, right? So, like, a couple of those blue cycling cards are situationally insane, right? Like, the tap 2 creatures down, the make your creature face 4/4 in power and toughness. So, like, those sort of things randomly come up. And 99.9% of the time, you're just going to have a plains, right? But that once in a blue moon where you really want to have that island, where maybe later in the game you have all your mana, you get to play it. Those sort of things are awesome. So, I think it opens up a whole lot of stuff there. These are super cool. I can't wait. It's also been confirmed. If you're at home, you're like, why are there 6 of them? Da 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 da. The next set's gonna have the last 4. They already announced it. So exclusive on the podcast. We know some of the lands for the next set. You heard it here first. Consider a prime. Next up for the double face cards, I have Turn Timber Symbiost. I think that's how you say that. It's 4 green for a sorcery. You look at the top 7 cards of your library, and you may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield. If it has converted mana cost 3 or less, it enters with 3 additional +1/+1 counters on it. Put the rest of your bottom of your library in a random order. and the backside's a land. But unlike the rest that we've talked about so far, this one actually you can pay 3 life to have it enter the battlefield untapped, which I think is just the world when it comes to these sort of cards. I think actually all of the mythic double face cards let you do this. Let you pay 3 life. I think they all actually have the potential to go back to at least Pioneer when it comes to power level and seeing play. But this one specifically, I think, is the one that will break into Modern, because Amulet Titan would love in the late game to have a land that they played early get picked up off a bounce land and just go looking for a Titan. And then if you hit a Azusa Dryad Scout, they're not the hits you wanted, but they're all 3 CMC or less. Also, Tireless Tracker post board. You have all those, and now they're all +3/+3. So not the Titan that probably won you the game on the spot, but dang, you just got so much closer. You just got a huge body on the battlefield, and you got all of that from a land that you probably wanted to play anyways. That combined with the Mammoth, I think Amulet's on track to be the best deck in Modern again. So that's where I'm at with that.
Cool. I don't have much to say about Modern, because I clearly play everything except Modern.
Yeah. What do you think about this one for Standard? Do you have any thoughts? The only deck I could really see it in was Adventures. That was like a slam dunk. But nah. I haven't thought about this that much. A lot of people think it's
the best. I really like it. It's I think it's a lot of mana, but I do really like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that outside of the context of your deck that can generate a bunch of mana on turn 3 or whatever, it's the weakest one. Maybe that with the blue one. So, yeah. That's all I have to say about it. This is my, setly, let's figure out how to put an Amulet card in the review. So, there we go. Allie, what's your second double face card?
Did you type the wrong one?
I changed it when I was driving home from work today, by the way. And so that's why I read the one that wasn't there. I originally had Seagate Restoration, but I've got a lot of problems with that card. It's just like a draw 3, I think, a bunch of the time, which is, cool for a land. It's just the blue.
I think we were still talking about the blue one. Yeah, of course, the green one's awesome. Yeah.
Okay, nice. Okay. Yes. Green rules, blue drools. That's what they've always said in Magic.
You right.
Allie, what's your other double face card? Because you had the Pathways.
Yeah, I did Agadeem's Awakening, which is X black, black, black. Return from your graveyard to the battlefield any number of target creature cards that have different CMC cost, X or less. And I think this card is super cool. I think this card can... I don't know. I'm thinking historic. I'm super excited with all these cards to play a bunch of different things. At first, this jumps out to me as just, like, mono black, whether that be, like, a Godfarer's Gift deck or, like, a Sacrifice deck or aggro just to, like, refuel after someone board wipes. It feels like it has a bunch of different applications. Even, like, late game of like a Sacrifice deck or something. It just feels like it has a lot of different purposes and it can fit into a lot of different places, and we just need to figure out where it's the very best in.
Yeah, I think this is the best card in the set. I know that's kind of a depends on who you talk to type thing, but I'm fairly confident this is the best card in the set. It, to me, what everything you said is just so true, and it's just a land 90% of the time. But, like, how many times have you played, like, a cycle land and you're like, I just want to draw, like, my Lurrus or my thing? And these lands are just always, like, they're never as the versatility of what you could draw of a cycling card, right? But they always hit that one thing and they're just a land 90% of the time. Like, I think...
Exactly what you've been saying. Like, and going back to, like, the other point, if you're flooding out, you really just don't want that to be just another land. Instead, you have this really powerful spell, or it's turn 1, sure, I'll take a swamp.
Yeah, I think if players saw them as a land on the front side and a spell on the back side, they would get it before they played with it. You know what I mean? Like, because I feel like what we're saying is something that, like, hasn't hit the mainstream, like, social consciousness yet. And so I feel like a crazy person talking that I know is going to... I don't know, but I'm, like, really confident it's going to be right in 2 weeks. So, yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say on this card. I think everything you said is perfect. It's just so good. Like, even X's 2 to bring back a 1 and a 2 drop late game is so strong. And let's be honest, it's going to be more than that, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
You're just going to flood out in games. It happens all the time. It's just super strong. Let's go to our WoW section. This is our newest section. WoW are just kind of cards that we saw and we're like, wow, that's really cool. We're exciting. We're like, what were they thinking? And it's kind of made us go like, what? Wow. And so the first one for me is Leyline Tyrant. Leyline Tyrant is a dragon for 2 red, 4/4 flying. You don't lose unspent mana. You don't lose unspent red mana as the steps end or the phases end. And then when Leyline Tyrant dies, you may pay any amount of red when you do deal that much damage to any target. So I think it's just kind of a really cool, like, mana floaty thing. But the reason I said wow is that this is going to be in the same set with Firestone Dimension. That was the original plan, was for this and Fires to be around. And so I just was like, wow. Like, I don't even know. Just, like, even if you play, like, a random X spell, it just seems so good. Even if, like, even if the play is just, like, get deal +3 when this thing dies, that seems super strong to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. But.
No, I really like the idea of this card, too. It also elicited a wow in me.
You love to
hear that. Not because of Fires of Adventure. I don't know. That kind of stuff is cool. I like weird stuff that's not really done a whole lot. I like seeing people try things. And this definitely doesn't feel like Escape Uro broken level. This seems like, oh, okay. Like, this is cool and unique that kind of has, like, a specific thing you need to do, I guess, outside of Fires of Invention. But
yeah. Yeah, it also works super well with the Mythic Red Double Face card, and my only complaint with this set, Allie, is that I feel I'm going to need to craft 4 of every Mythic Double Land. So, I think this card's just, it's going to maybe see some out of play, but it's just a really cool card, and I think when we do see it see play, it's going to be like Leyline Tyrant again? Like, why did this happen to me? Like, you know, they just, like, float 3 mana, you know, and then all right, it bolted you if you kill it, and heaven forbid you untap, and you at least get, you know, Lava Axe, so, yeah.
It would be super cool if, like, Arena gave you, like, a little extra amount of wild cards for rotation. I get that you're not losing, like, cards, because they just go to Historic, but, like, to kind of help you get back on your feet in the new format, because there's just so many cards that just, like, either aren't playable anymore, or that suddenly become playable because there's not cards in the format anymore that are making it unplayable.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's funny, they try to do this in like a sneaky and like a marketing way, right, where they're like, if you buy the battle pass, you're gonna get, you know, all these extra packs or whatever, you know, like the renew thing. So
I get to find out what custom emotes are.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm
hyped for that. There has to be some kind of like policing on that or something. I don't know. I don't know what like the what it means.
Yeah, I assume that they were like you got to pick which emotes will pop up above your character from pre-selected ones, not like type out what you want. Like, I assume there's going to be one that's like okay with a question mark, you know what I mean, or like, are you sure about that, or just like things along that nature, so that like emoting is, you know, more expressive and more tilting. So but yeah, maybe you can type in there. I thought My read with it was that I was going to have to, like, get pre-selected ones. But if I can type anything, I'm just going to put consider a prime for all of them and just spam, like, constantly.
Yeah, I have no idea what the custom emotes could be.
Yeah. That's weird that we haven't heard about that yet. It's, like, 2 days from now. It's wild. All right, whatever. My other WoW card is Angel of Destiny. It's 3 white for a creature angel cleric. 2/6. It has flying and double strike. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you and that player each gain that much life. At the beginning of your end step, if you have at least 15 or more life than your starting life total, each player Angel of Destiny attack this turn loses the game. So if you're in Commander, you can kill like 2 people if you had like a combat celebrant type card. But yeah, it's just like a really weird card that like wins the game in this sort of weird way, and it just seemed kind of really cool, and so, yeah. I don't have a whole lot to say about this card. It just seemed really cool.
Yeah, that's, I don't even know how to evaluate that. That's very weird.
Yeah, because your opponent gains life, you don't want your deck to be about attacking in any other way unless it's Angel of Destiny, and you clearly want to gain life. So I wonder if there's, like, a Sphinx's Rev type card, or, like, way to turbocharge life gain. Like, Heliod's Intervention, right? Like, you could play this and then pass, untap, and then, like, play Heliod's Intervention for, like, X is 3 at least, because this is a 5, and you'd gain 12 life. So that would put you really close. So maybe there's something with that. I don't know. That's... Who knows? I expect to see, like, one of those CFB top 5 fail thingies where someone dies to Angel of Destiny. I don't know.
Perfect.
Allie, what's your first WoW card?
I did Nissa of Shadowed Bows?
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Bows? Okay.
Bouch. Wow.
Yeah. My WoW reaction to this is, wow, we have another Nissa that kind of does the same heckin' thing. I'm so...
What does Nissa do?
All right. We got a static ability. Very cool. Very cool. Love it. I guess 2 black green, and then a static ability. Landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, put a loyalty counter on Nissa. +1. Untap target land you control. You may have it become a 3/3 elemental creature with haste and menace until end of turn. It's still a land. And then -5. She starts at 4, by the way. -5. You may put a creature card with CMC cost less than or equal to the number of lands you control onto the battlefield from your hand or graveyard with 2/1/1 counters on it.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff that you can do. What do you want to do with it where you just kind of wow and like another Nissa that makes lands and involves lands?
It just like it's obviously very different, but I looked at it and I like read it for a little bit. I'm like, wow, this is just like the same. This is the same thing. I'm so mad. I was so happy to get Nissa out of standard, out of a format, and now there's just this one. Although, like, this one seems very cool, but still mad.
Yeah, this one does a lot, I think, a lot cooler things than double your mana, make an army you can never beat.
But
yeah, I had a friend who misread it the first time. He was just like going off in a group chat. He's just like, this is like so absurd. Like, it's not as good as doubling your mana, but it's still really good. And I was just like, what are they talking about? And like maybe 10 minutes later, like, I misread that card. Might be. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. Oh, yeah. What's your other one?
We have Lotus Cobra. It's a reprint. But let's see. Where are you, Lotus Cobra? It is 1 in green. Landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, add 1 mana of any color. And it's a 2/1. My reaction was, wow, because wow, why would they print this into a format with Uro and Cultivate and everything that's just been lands for the past 2 years? Like, maybe it's fine. Maybe it's actually fine in standard, and maybe that's fine, but Historic, we have Explore and Growth Spiral still, along with all the other cards I listed. You can go turn 2 Lotus Cobra, and then you can do turn 3 Growth Spiral, play a land, get a trigger, play your other land for turn, it's a Fabled Passage, get a trigger, fetch, get a land, third trigger, and then play Nissa. OG Nissa. Why can we do this?
OG Nissa? The Elf Nissa? That's in Historic?
Yeah, that one.
No, I'm not joking. Is that what you meant? What's OG Nissa?
No, just the one that's in. The Nissa we were just talking about.
I legit thought the Elf Nissa.
The 5/5. Or the 5 mana one. That makes lands.
I was trying
the
to
what
OG Nissa did. Okay, yeah. Wait, does that work? Because the landmen are tapped off Fabled Passage, right? Because it'd be 4.
No, because you play a land for turn.
Right,
it's so turn 2, you have 2 lands, you play Growth Spiral, you play your first land, you play your second land, you have 4 lands.
Oh, you're Growth Spiraling into Cobra into it. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
This is turn 3.
Gotcha. Okay.
Icky.
That's it.
And then not to mention, like, all the... I guess it makes, like, Omnath probably playable in standard, but...
Oh, I've got so many hot takes on Omnath. I don't wanna... We'll get there, I think, later in the show, but... Yeah, I'm curious. I have to assume at a point we can only play so many cards that cheat mana and like a thing that's a payoff. I wonder what the breaking point on that is. It's funny because to me, when I saw this card, I thought, dang, I'm going to get turn 3 Questing Beast a bunch between this and Tangle Ferrothorn. Like, Maybe I'm just not dreaming big enough. That's what I'm learning. I was like, God, there's 8 ways to play a turn 3 questing beast. That's so strong. All right. Yeah, I think this card's super strong, though. I mean, it's very clearly proven in, like, older formats to be an all-star, so. Lotus Cobra. Cobra Kai Never Die, Allie. Have you watched that on Netflix?
Not.
It's pretty good. Didn't like the Karate Kid. I liked it. Let's move on to Hopeful. Hopeful are cards that we're not quite sure are going to make it, but we're really hopeful they're going to get there. My first one is Jace the Mirror Mage. 1 blue for a legendary planeswalker, Jace, that has Kicker 2. When Jace the Mirror Mage enters the battlefield, if Kicker was played, create a token copy of Jace Mirror Mage, except it has 1 loyalty. It starts with 4, if it's not the token copy, by the way. You can +1 to scry 2, and you can 0 to draw a card. And reveal it. I'm sorry. You draw a card and reveal it, and then you remove a number of loyalty counters equal to the converted mana cost of the card from Jace Mirror Mage. So it's kind of like this weird, like, if you kick it, in theory, you could, like, plus the little one, and so that way you can, like, minus for the big one, or you 0 for the big one, and they, like, move through a card. But it leads to a lot of really interesting scenarios, I think, where, like, if you have any other scrying, you could start drawing lands. I think Jace Mirror Mage, though, really just wants a deck that's low CMC, so that you are able to, like, flip the top card of your deck, like, twice with Jace, because if it's not kicked at that point, you've got Divination out of the card. And if it is kicked, you can maybe do a little bit more. So I'm curious to see how it plays out. It does also, when I first saw this card, I was much higher on it than I am now, because I think we're going to have a lot more incidental land, non-land cards in our deck that are lands for everything except Jace, right? Like, if you play 1 Seagate Reformation in your deck, or 1, you know, Argul's Awakening, whatever that card was called, Agumon's Awakening, then this becomes a lot worse, right? Because it's a land, yes, most of the time in your deck, but for specifically for Jace, it's a lot worse. So I'm hopeful Jace will make it, but I've got some, you know, concerns.
Yeah, I was also hopeful for Jace. That was one of mine, too. Ooh. Do you want me to read it?
Sure. And so do you have any other big thoughts on it, Allie?
Particularly, this was the first card spoiled for the set, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just, like, reading it, even, like, the other Teferi, too, it was just, like, really refreshing to see planeswalkers that I found interesting, but not overpowered, and then not, like, Oko the Trickster,
yeah,
planeswalker, world X, whatever.
Yeah, I think this card does a really good job of showing what Kicker on a Walker can do, and how, like, it lets you be early and kind of strong, and later game it's kind of at the power level of a 5-mana walker, maybe a little more than the normal 5-mana walker would be. But yeah, I think this card has the potential. It's kind of really depends on the cards around it. If we can consistently, like, hit, you know, 1 and 2 mana cards off our Jaces, we're going to be doing it. You know, we're going to be plussing on one copy to scry to set up for the other one, and you just kind of go back and forth doing that, and it really turns into scry 2, draw a card every turn, which is nice. I like having that sort of thing available to me, so it's really cool. My other card that I'm hopeful for is Shatterskull Smashing. It's X red for a sorcery. Shatterskull Smashing, does X damage divided as you choose among up to 2 target creatures and or planeswalkers. If X is 6 or more, Shatterskull Smashing deals twice X damage divided as you choose among them instead, and it's a land on the back, but it's a mythic one, so you can spend 3 life to make it in or untapped. This one is one that a lot of people are pretty low on. I basically think that a lot of the times red decks want to have spells, and they also want to play low land counts, right? Because typically your red deck is either like a ramp deck, which you have a big payoff here, or like an aggressive deck. And having some way to answer a bigger threat or maybe a couple of little threats in the mid game is super nice to have on a land for the red decks, and also just makes it so curving out is something you can actually do, and as long as you aren't playing the red mirror, you're probably fine, or the aggressive mirror, I should say, you're probably fine spending 3 life to play, like, you know, your 1 drop of choice, or your 2 drop on curve, and then in the late game, you draw this, and you're like, oh, sure, spend, you know, 3 mana, kill your Lotus Cobra, and, you know, ping your Jace down, you know, where, like, shock your Nissa, that sort of thing. So, I think Shadow Skull Smashing is the one I'm the least high on, but I still think it's gonna have a big shot of making it. It kind of just depends on the type of red decks we play. So
yeah, it's really interesting. I especially like when new red cards are printed, right? Because it always feels like people kind of write off red decks as like, oh, it's just like the aggro deck or whatever. But I think there's a lot of really cool and different things you can do and how you can build red decks. And this is definitely different.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if we talk about like the late game payoff type thing, even if you, like, so if you get to, it's 8 mana, right, to get like the full power of this card, and then it's like basically obliterating your opponent's board or two things on the board. Even if it's before that, though, like, once you get to the X is 4, you're probably killing two things or one really good thing a lot of the time, just with the way Magic plays out. And having that ability, once again, I've said it over and over again, but I really want to hammer it home, is vital and crucial to, like, these sort of things being powerful. So I basically expect every red deck I play, unless things change drastically, to have at least one of this card. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on that. Allie, what's your first hopeful? Well, I guess your second. You had Jace as well.
Oh, yeah. I also said Jace. Mm-hmm. I have Omnath. I don't know what direction your hot takes are going in Omnath, so I'm scared.
I'm keeping them to myself.
So we got Omnath, Locus of Creation. Red, green, white, and blue. Our teamer friend got a little lighter. And when Omnath enters the battlefield, draw a card. Landfall. All right, y'all have to pay attention, okay? Landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, gain 4 life. If this is the first time this ability is resolved this turn. If it's the second time, add red, green, white, blue. If it's the third time, Omnath deals 4 damage to each opponent and each planeswalker you don't control. That is a 4/4.
What are your thoughts?
That's it. I'm done.
So I assume you're really high on this card.
Yeah. I mean, last week I wrote an article on the cards I was most excited for in Historic. I do think this is maybe a card that can just exceed more in Standard because it's a smaller card pool. There's less powerful things in Standard than Historic. But you also can, like, I don't know, in Historic you can use a lot more things to, like, fuel this, right? Because you do have the Growth Spiral, you do have the Explore, you have, like, the other things I talked about when I was talking about Lotus Cobra as well. But then you also have, in Standard, you can play Genesis Ultimatum. Play the Elementals and just, like, splash white, especially with these new lands. You can kind of just, like, actually splash white if you want to and hope to hit it off of those lands or Lotus Cobra or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very interesting card that my hot take on it is, I've seen a lot of people say, oh, God, this is, like, the error of the set where this is going to, like, dominate Standard. And I think there's just, like, a lot of tools that beat this card, and this card's just going to have weekends where it's good. You just have, like, Red Cap Melee, Mystical Dispute as just, like, the first two that come to mind that are one mana answers to this card, right? And I cannot imagine having my Omnath Red Cap Melee just, like, into me. You know what I mean? Just, it's over.
You didn't even say the most powerful or, like, most common one, Aether Gust.
That rotates.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, it's part of the core set. It's weird because it feels like it's an Eldraine card, but
yeah, it feels like all of the, like, color hate cards go together, but
yeah, they did weirdly 2 cycles. Yeah, it's super weird.
Oh, it also gets hit by Devout Decree, which I guess is also rotated. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's so
and Noxious Grasp. Oh my god.
Wait, I think Noxious Grasp rotates. I think that's the core
set. It does rotate, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just, like, adding on to the color hates. They all hit it.
Yeah.
They all hit it.
And being all the colors means color hate cards are good against you more at 6. but no, I just think that, like, there's a lot of really cool things you can do, and there are a lot of really efficient answers to it. And, hey, I'm down for that. If there's a weekend where you're supposed to play Omnath, and you're willing to roll the dice that people don't have their Red Cap Melees and Mystical Disputes and don't draw them, your deck's going to be busted, right? And you're going to get rewarded, and people are going to freak out about this card, but looks like there are a lot of answers you can do, and both of those are really efficient answers.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a card that people are going to just, like, misplay. Mm-hmm. I think this is definitely not a card you play when you have 4 mana. I think you hold on to this card until you can at least do something with it.
Yeah, you basically have to, right? Like, you have to, especially if you're playing against a deck with red, right, you have to, like, play it when you can play a land so you can at least get that life back and hope to get a second land into play to get your mana back. So, yeah, I agree. I think I think that card has potential, but I highly doubt that card can run rampant for multiple weekends, at least in the current environment. You know, maybe a bigger set standard, you have more answers for the answers, but right now, feeling good about that being the sort of thing that's going crazy. All right. Allie, do you have anything else you want to say about Omnath before we move on to our hits?
I'm good.
Awesome. Omnath's a being of little words, much like us about it. Hits. Hits are the cards that we think are going to be like our one or two on a normal set review. The things that we kind of expect to impact Standard a bunch. We already talked about one of mine. That was Agadeem's Awakening. That was the black X spell that brings stuff back. Don't have anything else I want to say on that. Just want to mention it. I think it's the actual best. And I think the second best card, I wasn't sold at first, but the more I think about it, the more I could see it happening. It's Emyria's Call. It's 4WW for a sorcery. You create 2/4/4 white angel warriors. Each token creature with flying, those with flying, and then non-angel creatures you control gain indestructible until the end of turn. And it's also an untapped land on the backside if you spend 3 life. I'm not going to say the whole thing about how powerful it is at the versatility. This is just like a thing that actually ends the game. It doesn't need the setup that Awakening does. So maybe it's slightly better there, but also just giving your creatures indestructible. Like, if you had, you know, just a little something on the board and you put this, you have 2/4/4s, and if they have a board wipe, that might not be enough now because now the other creature's probably indestructible because you probably don't have a bunch of angels in your deck. So I think Emyria's Call, X4 of in white decks most likely, going to be super strong. You love to see it and hate to see it. So
I could I'm definitely the kind of person who likes to see something like this in like a blue white control deck because I love blue white control, but I also love to have real win cons.
Yeah, I love to finish the round before time is called.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
big fan of ending the game.
Yeah, winning the game is highly underrated in Magic players, and it is very good for you win the game when it happens. But yeah, it's a land 99% of the time, and the rest of the time it's 8 power across 2 flyers. Probably really good. So, Allie, what are your hits, unless you have something else you want to say about Emyria's Call?
No, that sounds good. My two hits. I got Seagate Stormcaller, which is 1 and a blue. Kicker, 4 and a blue. I clearly like text boxes. When Seagate Stormcaller enters the battlefield, copy the next instant or sorcery spell with CMC 2 or less you cast this turn when you cast it. That is redundant. If Seagate Stormcaller was kicked, copy that spell twice instead. You may choose new targets for the copies. Alright, besides the text box being super redundant, I don't know. This card just seems neat. I think it has more implications in Eternal formats, but not even like Standard. I don't know. Like, you could probably make some kind of like mid-rangey deck, but I was excited for this card in Historic. I think it fits well into Sultai. I think it fits well into... Is it Phoenix? If people are still playing that deck, I'm super... That makes me so happy. Just like, I don't know. You get to like cantrip and you can copy your cantrip and then you can bring back Phoenixes, or you set up really well for a couple following turns because you don't have Phoenixes in yard, but oh look, you just like manipulated or like looked at the top like 4 or 5 cards of your library.
Yeah, it's super cool. It also works so well with those discard effects like the Tormenting Voice, Cathartic Unions, just like the copy you don't have to discard for, and you want to play those in the Archlight Phoenix decks, right? So,
Oh yeah. So, I have a soft spot for Is It Phoenix. I think that's super cool. I think probably the better deck you can like Thoughtseize twice with Sultai.
Yeah,
you can, like, Growth Spiral twice if you're trying to be good at Magic and not chart a course twice.
Yeah, Cling to Dust is another one that comes to mind. Blood Chief's Thirst is one that we're not going to talk about today, but it's just a black kill something. Kicker works well with this mechanics because it doesn't increase the CMC, so yeah, this card is looking to be pretty strong in the Pioneer and lower formats. So
I think this card's very cool. Some people said some stuff with like various storm decks in older formats, which seems really cool too, but I think at that point you could also just play like Snapcaster Mage. There are some differences there that I do like, though.
Yeah, the biggest one that I've seen is that it works much better with Cabal therapy, because you therapy on one, and then you play this, and you sack it for the flashback.
Yeah.
So, like, rip their hand apart, you just can't miss, really, so. Yeah, that's cool, but yeah, I think for the most part, if your deck has Snapcaster, it's probably better to have Snapcaster, but a bunch of these formats don't have Snapcaster Mage, so you got this, and it's gonna be good. So yeah, I really like this card.
Very cool. I'm a big fan. And then my last card is Ashaya, Soul of the Wild. 3 green. Power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control. Non-token creatures you control are forests in addition to their other types. Star. Again, just I feel like the theme of my picks are does stuff with lands, which is very, very relevant in my most played format, Historic, because, again, we have Explore and Growth Spiral and Uro, and we have five drop Nissa to pair with this and be kind of weird there.
Yeah, it's super exciting. It's funny, the thing that I think of with this card is I can't get my board Cyclonic Rift in EDH. Like, all your creatures stay alive because they're lands.
Yeah. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to say. I'm very interested to see how that card's a card that, like, I could totally see doing messed up stuff. It's just so off the beaten path that I have a hard time conceptualizing what to do with it, you know? So, that's super cool, though. I'm glad we got to talk about that card. Do you have any, like, things you want to put in your deck with that card? Like, obviously, Nissa, you know, I make forest do double mana, we did it. But, like, do you have any other ideas beyond that sort of thing? Or are you just kind of, like, that's kind of thing is the area you want to start exploring?
Yeah, it was mostly just, like, Nissa making the, like, creatures tap for extra. Like, I think you could set up pretty well, right? Like, if you have, like, untap with, like, this, or already have a Nissa out, and then play this, and then you have infinite mana or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it works really well with Nyx Bloom Ancient, now that we're talking, right? Because it makes Nyx Bloom a forest, and then, like, it's kind of a land, it's like a mana elf, right? Like, if it's just a 5 mana 1/1, it's a mana elf, so you could get Nyx Bloom on the next turn. If you have other creatures, then boom, then you're really popping off, so.
Yucky.
Yeah. Love some Nyx Bloom Ancient. Yeah, I'm a big fan of tripling mana.
Rite of Replication, Nyx Bloom Ancient.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. The double one with Jumpstart from in Standard would crash Arena a bunch when it came to your mana. So, like, if you QQ'd, it would just, like, the client would break because it counts each mana individually. So if you have a couple Nyx Bloom Ancients, you're tripling, and then it just can't handle it. So that's it for Zendikar. That's the whole set review. Allie, are you super excited to play this set in the mere 72 hours from the time of this recording?
Yeah. I'm going to be playing the early access event, so that's going to be fun. I feel like I am one of the only people still in the creator program, even though I wasn't for a short period of time.
Did you do the old re-up?
I just sent an email. I'm like, hey, I want to do early access, and then they put me back in.
You love to see it. Maybe I'll consider an email. I currently was kicked because being a writer and a podcaster and a streamer wasn't enough for the content creation program, despite meeting their goals. But you can watch Allie on twitch.tv/mythic_amiibo. Is that right? Did I nail it?
Of course, you got it.
Bang, bang. And then where else can they find you, Allie?
On Twitter at mythicamiibo.
You can find me each and every week here. You can find me at twitch.tv/TheMasonClark. I'm probably going to stream more with the whole new set coming out. I'm streaming a little Historic every now and again. And you can find me on Twitter at MasonEClark. You can check out my blog or my articles. I don't know. It's technically, it says blog on Card Kingdom, but they're articles. Each week on cardkingdom.com. So thank you all so much for hanging out this week. And we'll see you all next week for another episode of Constructed Criticism.